to you live somewhere near the Vic Institute. It's the Lost Experience Clues podcast at thelostexperienceclues.com. Now, here are the guys that are keeping the top-heavy Helgus Antonius afloat. David Penuel, Daniel Milner, William West, and/or Jeff Parker, and Patrick Haney.
Oh, yes. And/or not Jeff Parker, and/or not Patrick Haney, and/or not William West. Once again, Daniel.
This is Daniel. I am here.
And this is David. I am here. Apparently, we're the only two guys in Dallas
who are not cool enough to have anything else to do on a Thursday night, apparently.
Listen, I just got back from my vacation in Destin, Florida, and so I've been partying plenty. It's time to go back to work on the Lost Experience Clues and on the podcast. I'm sorry that the other guys couldn't be here. I realize this is way better when we have more people, but I do think there's a lot of great things for us to talk about. And so, Daniel, if it's all right with you, I think let's dive right in talking about something that happened today. Is that cool with you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The big thing today is the two versions of the Inquisitor documents. You got this issue where that Rachel took her November 2001 version down after one day, and then she replaced it with the one that we saw from Persephone that was dated March 2006. That was hacked way back on June 1st. We've been demanding answers from her all day on her blog to no avail. The big question everybody's talking about right now is, was this just a mistake, or is there really more here than meets the eye?
Yeah, we had that hack back on June 1st that was talking to us about missing organs, about that boy that in Cape Town, and then all of a sudden Hanzo took over the Cape Town Inquisitor, the newspaper, and printed a retraction, and the reporter supposedly went missing or died. Is that right?
Right.
They had the phone conversation with Persephone. Well, Rachel just posted, like, she referred to that and just posted a picture as a reference to that hack, and it was, like, totally different. The pictures were different. The date on it was different. And everyone was like, what in the world's that? And then all of a sudden, she replaced it with what the original one looked like and had no explanation for it whatsoever. So Matt the Pale was leading the charge today in the comments and was just going, hey, what? We need to go to Rachel Blake's blog and demand an answer for that. Here's what some of the people said. You know, I've been on vacation, like I said, and you were slammed at work today, right?
It was a fun week.
I bet it was. But we read through all the comments, and I just wanted to pull up, since I wasn't in the middle of that discussion, I just wanted to pull up a few of comments. You know, Maven said some things. Idaho Girl said some things. I want to reference those. Here's what Maven said. She said, those who want answers, or there's two schools of thought here. There's one, those who want answers to very blatant errors, and two, those who just want to take everything on the surface, play along, overlook some pretty big boo-boos. And she says she's torn in between the two. You know, it is troubling that there's two versions of the Inquisitor out there. It's not a small mistake. And so we need some sort of an explanation there. But also, the powers that be are giving stuff at their own pace. They've pre-planned everything, probably from the videos, the podcasts, to all the different JPEGs and pictures and images we see. Odds are that was probably like a preliminary draft of the newspaper, and then some changes were made, and accidentally they grabbed the wrong file and posted it. But it could mean something.
Yeah, it could. I would love to believe that they are that well planned and they've thought this out that well, but I don't know. I think that they're human too, and this reeks of somebody uploading the wrong version.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk of interns getting fired today, which if you're an intern that's working on the experience, we're really sorry about some of the errors that we've seen.
Since you're fired now, you can email us with all the upcoming clues, and you won't get in trouble.
Anything you know, just shoot it our way. Idaho Girl said this. She said, all in all, even with the glitches and minor frustrations, I have to take my hat off to the powers that be for what they have done, for the creation of this game. Idaho Girl says, I'm willing to allow for human error that can occasionally occur, and she thinks the only really bad mistake was the map from Canada. Everything else has been pretty trivial. And you know what? I'm going to talk later. We're going to ask some questions later in the podcast. I'm going to talk about that map from Canada. I'm not so sure that's a mistake. Lastly, did you see what Fenris said in the comments when you were reading through there?
No, I didn't get to that yet.
Fenris, she said that Fenris says that he's come to the conclusion that the powers that be aren't that clever with all the suspicious material Rachel gives us. There's too many sloppy things going on. He thinks that we all just need to take a major dose of suspension of disbelief. I'm kind of in Fenris's camp to go that we do have to take a major dose of suspension of disbelief because, you know, you and I were chatting earlier about Persephone's hacks. Like, if she wanted to give us that information and if it was, like, dangerous or time-sensitive at all, why would she go to all the time of creating those elaborate flash hacks that have all these graphics, that has sound in the background? I mean, that's pretty elaborate for a hack just to reveal information, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think part of the problem, too, is that we've been set up for this game by the show Lost, which is a great show. And, you know, how many times have we heard the creators say everything happens for a reason on this show? And in the show, most of the time, that's true. You know, I remember back at the beginning of season two, they replayed the same scene a few times over again, and you learn new things each time. Uh-huh. And when you went back and watched the old episodes, you could see they were planning that out. The problem is this game is not going to have anywhere near the same resources as the show does, and they may not have the time or the wherewithal to plan it out as well. So things like this are going to happen, I think, and we just either can stop playing and protest or get over it and get on with our lives in the game.
Yeah, they are trying to create a reality, but it's a big deal to create an entire reality. And you know, Fenris goes on and he says, just go with the flow. That's what I think. He says, it's not easy. It's not easy, I know, and we would have to assume that they won't try to pull something sneaky on us, like having a longtime goodie end up secretly being a baddie. And I don't think they'll do that. They're not going to, like, totally turn around and all of a sudden Rachel is evil and all that stuff. So let's go with where they're leading us. Don't be so paranoid that we lose track of the flow of the game. There's a lot that's coming up. Act 3 is coming up. Act 2 has been different than Act 1, so we can expect something different from Act 3. And so, you know, I like all the chatting in there about, hey, what are we going to do about these errors? I do think we need to demand kind of answers to them because they can be really confusing for those of us that are following every detail. But at the same time, we need to stick with the main flow of the game. And along those lines, there are a lot of questions related to errors and continuity and things like that. If you haven't seen Matt the Pale's kind of website about continuity errors, that's linked in the comments. You need to check that out. But there's also some major unanswered questions that aren't related to continuity or errors of presentation of information that I think will help kind of set our course here. We're mid Act 2, about halfway through the entire game, and let's get back on course by looking at the big unanswered questions. So Daniel and I have, 12 about unanswered questions? We want to go through, we're going to ask them. We want you guys to chat about it. Maybe let's get on our message board a little bit more. There's some folks in there, Dead Jester and others that are really owning discussion of the podcast and the message board. If you guys will list these questions out in a post on the message board related to podcast episode 8, which is what this is, I'd love to see some chatter and engage in some chatter about these questions. Question number one, Daniel. It's the big one.
Number one, where is Alvar Hanzo? Sorry, that's my best Rachel impersonation.
That was really good.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Has been asked from day one. And I don't feel like we're anywhere closer to an answer.
No, I don't either. And you know, frankly, I don't think we're going to find out in this game. That's a big, big reveal, not just in this game, but also in the show storyline. And I don't know if they're going to give that to us.
What do you mean by that? Because also, bro, what are we doing? We're not even...
Oh, man.
What do you mean by that? Because as far as I can remember, Alvar Hanzo has only been mentioned once in the orientation video in the show. But you think that has major implications?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you look at how it was mentioned, though. It was mentioned in the orientation film that was setting him up as behind the Dharma Initiative, which is behind all kinds of stuff on that island, for all we know at this point. And
I'm going to go interrupt. There's so much sponsorship in this game. I'm hungry right now because I ate a late dinner. I'm going to be eating Teddy Grahams if you hear chewing or crunching. And it's not necessarily, I'm not getting paid by Teddy Grahams to do this, but I'm eating Teddy Grahams.
I was kind of wondering. That Teddy Grahams t-shirt you're wearing is a little weird too, but...
No. And the
and the barriers.
Yeah, I shouldn't have those on, but...
Yeah, that's a little awkward. But I don't know. Looking at how big Hanzo is in the Lost Universe, I don't know if the creators of the show are going to let that story be told in the format of this game.
I might disagree with you because I don't think they would set up this game and kind of build it around that question from the very beginning, where is Alvar Hanzo, if they weren't going to at least give us some major clues about that. So I think we might even see him before the end of the game. That's mine. Okay, question number two. So question number one is, where is Alvar Hanzo? Does anybody have any idea? We know where he's last seen, but that was 3 years ago. Next, here's a good question. This came up from the Blood, Sorrow, Money, three-layered document, the Retrievers of Truth, quote-unquote, helped us find, and Rachel basically gave us. But anyways, what is the Spider Protocol? In this document, Daniel, have you actually gotten to see that? It's green, red, and blue. I know you've been so busy lately.
Yeah, I did catch that one.
You did? So that is basically a note from Thomas Middlework to, he says, team. He says, hey, team. And so he's talking to a team of people about different islands and things like that. And he talks about the Spider Protocol. On our blog, you can find that one. I'm trying to figure out exactly which clue is it. You remember which clue that is? 66, 60, might even be down. No, it's 65. Down towards the bottom of it, you can find that document. It says Moki or Machi or whatever that is hooked us up with all three combined. And basically, he says, team, after careful scrutiny of the census figures, the geological reports, all that, he says, hey, these sites, Alpha, Beta, Delta, they're unsuitable for carrying out the Spider Protocol. And then he says, despite my reticence, Fates, Delta's a card. We have no choice but to fall back to the original island target. Hanzo Foundation has not utilized the site for some time. Most people, including myself, have been speculating that the original island target is the island. You think so?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're really hinting at it if it's not. I mean, it says the unique properties render it more than adequate for our purposes. You know, we've already learned in the show about some of the unique properties of that island. I'm not giving anything away with that, I don't
right.
think, but... If it's not the island they're looking at, they're really setting us up to believe that, I think.
Now, I don't know if this has been pointed out. The question here is, by the way, what is Spider Protocol? Okay,
right.
We need to figure out what they're trying to do, but I want to point something out that I haven't seen mentioned anywhere. Maybe it has been. But the key sentence in that document is, while the Hanzo Foundation has not utilized that island for quite some time, its unique properties render it more than adequate for our purposes at this particular juncture. Now, and he talks above that about Alpha, Beta, and Delta. And here's all I want to say is when we got those maps, when he was carrying those out, basically I don't think that Middlework wasn't looking for an island. He was picking an island.
Right.
He wasn't trying to discover where an island was. He didn't know where it was. He's picking an island for the Spider Protocol. So the islands around Lake Superior could very possibly have been Alpha, Beta, or Delta. Possibilities for the Spider Protocol that he was considering and realized those are not adequate. And so that's why she's trying to lead us, Rachel's trying to lead us towards the one she thinks it is, which is close to the equator, which I don't think our island on Lost, though, is very near the equator, is it? It's way south of the equator.
Well, I mean, we don't really know where it is. We know where the plane took off and where it's supposed to land, but it could be anywhere in between that. So
well, we have some good information from the pilot, but we don't know if that's trustworthy.
Right.
From back in the pilot episode. No pun intended, right? So what is the Spider Protocol? And remember, Middlework isn't necessarily looking for an island. He's probably more likely trying to pick or choose an island for the, what I believe to be, all-important Spider Protocol. And related to that island, he has to get a blood transfusion. I would label that question 2.5 is, okay, how is a blood transfusion related to the Spider Protocol or the island? That would be question 2.5. You want to bring us question number three, Daniel?
Not a problem. Question number three, who is Rachel's mom and how does this play into the plot? You know, there's been a lot of good discussion on that too. And I can't remember the name of the guy who used to use that as his quote when he signed off the air all the time. But there's some speculation that she may not have actually been You know, Mrs. Calabash is the name she used in the video. And it's actually just a sign-off that an old TV personality used to use all the time.
Or was he a radio personality?
I'm sorry, radio personality.
I'm pulling that up right now. I went blank.
That was a great find. One of our readers got that. And I know I was kind of Googling Calabash, different spellings, trying to see if there was a Calabash blog or something, looking for her lost daughter, Rachel. I don't know. I think that her mom will come into that later on. It seems a little bit random for them to have Rachel mention her and then have her not play any kind of part in the story, even if it's something on the lines of her losing her mom at an early age causes her to be more driven now, and that's what's making her hunt down Hanzo so much.
Well, I think it was a big deal. It was just mentioned. Her mom was just mentioned for the first time. But if anybody else remembers, we never posted this because we didn't know, you know, whether or not it would be a good idea. It was posted all over the place. But before the game, the Lost Experience actually began, a casting call was found for characters to play in the game, and it had different names for each character, and we basically figured out who most of those are. But there was a character in the casting call named Amy Jensen. And let me just read you guys the description for Amy Jensen, because I think this is really important when we're talking about Rachel's mom. It says this: early to mid-20s, an attractive, intelligent, resourceful, and puckish young woman, Amy Jensen, or Rachel Blake, always suspected that a piece of her past was missing, that her single mother never told her the entire truth about her father. With the same inquisitive yet rebellious spirit that led Amy to excel in her education, she put aside her career aspirations to search for her missing parent full-time, and she will do it with the same rebel ferocity and humor with which she has pursued everything in her life. And it says this is a major role that would recur in several episodes of the internet campaign. The actress would need to be available for various personal appearances from July through September. I'm thinking July is when they're going to have Comic-Con. Possibly Rachel Blake will fly over to the United States en route to Following Middlework somewhere. Who knows? But the important part there is that her mom was a single mother, never told her the entire truth about her father. So who's Rachel's mom? How does this play in the plot? Well, it leads us to her father, which is...
Yeah, I'm just wondering, when Rachel finds out her real last name, is she going to change the name of her blog from Stop Hanzo, since her name is really Rachel Hanzo?
You really think that she's Hanzo? Hanzo's old, dude.
He's old, but, you know, they're doing all kinds of crazy medical experiments in the Hanzo Foundation for better tomorrow. I don't know.
I just hope that Jupe isn't her father.
Wow. Next question.
It's actually one of the guys from randomshirts.com. Okay, question number four. That's a big question, though. Who's Rachel's mom and her dad, and how's that play in? That's huge. Number four, speaking of Jupe, it's a good question. Is Jupe just a mascot? I mean, is Jupe just a mascot, or will he play a bigger role in this game? You know, I'm coming to the conclusion of just going, they threw an animal in there so that chicks and children would like to talk about a monkey, and he's not even a monkey, but, you know, he's an ape. But is he just a mascot for the Hanzo Foundation, basically, and for this game, or is he going to be important?
Yeah, he's a mascot. I mean, this was brought up, I'm sure, in some kind of a brainstorming, whiteboarding session, and they're like, okay, this is a big foundation. They're into all kinds of medical research. What kind of pages can we do on the Hanzo website? Well, what if we had this orangutan that's, 100 years old, and we're keeping him alive as part of this life extension test? I guarantee you it was somebody's joke that turned into a real thing on the website. And
yeah.
I don't think they have any further plans for Jupe other than selling T-shirts.
Yeah, they were probably really laughing. It was a good joke that everybody's laughing about. The only only reason why I think he might have a bigger role is on the original Hanzo Foundation website. It says that, like, the sum of all their efforts is nothing less than the extension of human life itself. And since he is the kind of poster child for the life extension project, he's like the sum of all their efforts. Supposedly, and so maybe there is some more there.
That's interesting. I read that totally differently. I look at that as more of a hint towards the Valenzetti equation in terms of extending human life. If this equation is, I don't want to get into other questions here, but if it's about, you know, predicting the end of the world, maybe their efforts are to extend human life.
Okay, so Jupe might even be a diversion where he's not even a reality at all. There is no, because there are some continuity errors with what they tell us about Jupe. There is no 105-year-old orangutan at all whatsoever, and it's just saying that's what we're calling our life extension project, but what we're really doing is Valenzetti-related.
I don't know. I don't know that I would venture as far as whether or not they're saying there is an orangutan or not, but I think we're going to see more with the Valenzetti equation relating to their life extensions.
Okay, what do you guys think? Because that was the first clue that we got was from the send Jupe a message deal. So he might be important, he might not. That's question number four. Daniel, you want to read us question number five?
Absolutely. Question five, is DJ Dan really Peter Thompson? You know, on this last clue, there was this recording, and if you listen to the voices, I've listened to them, and I kind of agree. It sounds just like DJ Dan and Tanya.
I totally do. Wait, hang on. I got to blow this deal. I just want to say, first of all, I'm not going to gloat very much, but from the beginning, I mean, from May, I called it that Persephone was a girl named Rachel. That Rachel equals Persephone. Last week on the podcast, we played the audio. My ears were so attuned to the reality of their vocal instrumentation that I knew that Rachel and Persephone were one and the same. I listened to the voices over and over. Peter Thompson's voice is the same voice as DJ Dan's. And do you think, I mean, there was discussion in the comments. There's no way the powers that be are cheap enough to try to use the same guy, which a lot of people think is Javi, is one of the writers and all this. There's no way that cheap is to try to use the same guy for two different characters. He's got to be the same.
No, I mean, I agree. I think the only question at this point, since they've basically revealed it's the same person in terms of letting him use that voice, is DJ Dan really just that deep in terms of his infiltration of the Hanzo Foundation, or is he really not a good guy anymore? You know, there was some speculation about his sponsors. All of a sudden, he's sponsored by the same sites as the main Hanzo area, and
I feel like he is. I feel like he's maybe a good guy. Peter Thompson really is. He in that last one we saw the tension between him and Middlework, and that he's going, all right, I'm done with this. I can't get out, or they'll kill me, like the mob or something. So I'm gonna play this role completely and talk about a bunch of other stuff, but continue to bring it back to the Hanzo Foundation.
I really hope not. I mean, that is, as an executive, I would hope he could find a better way to get his message out than hosting a podcast and letting his voice be heard unaltered for anyone with an internet connection to hear.
Well, he does talk a little bit faster.
That is true. I am pretty impressed that we both were able to hear the similarity.
Here's the deal. If they're the same, I don't understand. Like you said, I don't understand really what significance that. I mean. Really? Why? Yeah. You know, why would he do that? And if he isn't the same, I just want to go, give me a break and redo the video with another voice or the audio with another voice. Don't use the same guy that you used for DJ Dan because that's really confusing to us. Question number six: who is Tanya? Could it be Liddy Whale or that voice? Who's the voice of the woman in the latest audio recording that was with Peter Thompson? I really think question six is that Tanya? If not, who is Tanya? Does she have a bigger role? And the question is, could it be Liddy Wales? We've got the Liddy Wales picture in the board of directors. It's got a big question mark on it. We've never really heard anything about her or from her. Is that who Tanya is? Is that who the other woman is? Some people have speculated about Gidget Girl being in that mix. I'm still, we're going to talk about her later, but, you know, do you have any ideas about Tanya?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Peter Thompson is DJ Dan, then the other voice was Tanya. As far as it being Liddy Wales or not, I don't know. I don't think we have enough information yet, but I think they're a combo package.
And what's the deal with Tanya? It seemed like she was there with DJ Dan through his first few podcasts, and then all of a sudden it seemed like some of her responses were pre-recorded. You know, could that be that, you know, that Peter and Liddy or DJ Dan and Tanya, whoever they are, were having to be separate at different locations, and so they were having to work out a podcast kind of like we do with our interviews.
Maybe. That's very interesting. You know, yeah, I have heard that there are actually programs now that will recognize, you know, text-to-speech type things. I know that's a little bit outlandish, but maybe that's what DJ Dan's using there. I don't know.
That's question six. Who is Tanya? Question seven, Daniel. Read that one.
Moving on here. How is the Valenzetti equation related to the Dharma Initiative? Is Valenzetti still alive? And if so, where is he? And also, will we ever see Gary Troop's book, Valenzetti Equation?
Man, that question, Daniel, thanks for asking that. And by the way, we're like, this is going to be a long podcast, but I think all these questions are really important. Dude, you know, the Dharma Initiative, you look at the Blast Door map, which I don't know if everybody's gotten to that point, and so spoiler warning coming up, but that map that Locke saw in Lockdown, that episode, there's a corner of it that says low Valenzetti-related activity, which to me implies that the rest of the island has high Valenzetti-related activity. Right. And so somehow the Dharma Initiative is related, you know, intimately with Valenzetti equation research or application or what. And we got to figure out how those two things are related, especially if we want to tie in what we're learning in this game to the show Lost.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely related to the Dharma Initiative. I think Valenzetti is definitely still alive, just as much as they've been hinting around about him possibly being alive in the clues. And as far as whether we'll see the book or not, I don't think we'll ever see the actual entire book. I think Rachel may uncover a few pages here and there that give us some key tidbits.
I would just say, though, from a marketing standpoint, I think the Valenzetti Equation book would probably sell more copies than Bad Twin.
Yeah, very possible, but I mean, I don't know what they're going to say for a whole book about an equation, really, without giving it all away.
That's true. And it's supposed to be nonfiction, so it wouldn't be as engaging as Bad Twin was. All right, on to question number eight. Question number eight is this. What is the real relationship between the Big Three? When I say Big Three, I mean the Hanso Foundation, Widmore Corporation, and Paik Heavy Industries. I mean, what is their – how did they get connected? How did Charles Widmore get connected with Alvar Hanso, with Mr. Paik? How did those three get connected, and what is their relationship like? Are they just using each other for things, or is there more of an intimate relationship there?
I don't know how much we're going to get into that. I think we're going to find out that they're all kind of being set up as these evil corporations that are kind of easy targets nowadays. And I don't know how much we're going to get into the relationship, actually.
I think we've got to get into the relationship, though, because this is a big tie into the show, because we've seen, spoiler warning, if you haven't seen the finale for season two, you know, fast forward 10 seconds, but we actually see a character from the Widmore Corporation, I'm not going to say who, in the finale. You know who it is. And obviously we have Sun and Jin, which are really closely related to Paik. And so, you know, that relationship, that's our biggest link to Hanso besides the orientation film that we have so far.
Yeah, that's all true. At the same time, it could be something as simple as Hanso has a lot of money and Widmore and Paik like money, and so they do things that aren't necessarily legal to help Hanso.
You're absolutely right. I'm wondering, though, if the relationship's deeper. Question nine, Daniel.
Moving on here. Of those characters listed in the casting call, this is what we referenced earlier as far as those postings for actors. We've got one called Frederick Deeds that we're not sure if we've seen yet. One of the characters, just to back up, we're looking for someone named Thomas Jackson. We believe this is Thomas Middlework. The description was early to mid-40s, a child prodigy in the sciences.
Hang on. Since we're short on time, let's not read it. I'll post it.
Okay.
We'll post it. But we've got Thomas Jackson, who we think is Thomas Middlework, and we've got Larry Cooper, who we think is
Gary Troop. Back on to Frederick Deeds here. We're not sure who this could be.
Read that description. You can read that one.
50s will also play older. Frederick Deeds worked his family business into an international conglomerate, becoming wealthy beyond his dreams in the process. A driven man, but not one to fall back on his privilege and the source of his money and power. Deeds is making every attempt to transform his fortune into a philanthropic concern. Guided by his conscience and passion, Deeds' desire to do what is right often clouds his judgment with terrible consequences. Actors should have or do British or general Western European accent.
Actors should sound like this, you know?
I'm just thankful you didn't ask me to do that.
The actors should sound with a little bit of an accent, but hey, that sounds like Alvar Hanso.
Yeah, that's exactly what I pictured Hanso.
But, you know, the only other option to me is if Charles Widmore, for some reason, is connected with the Hanso Foundation because he really believes that they're philanthropic and he's trying to be philanthropic by connecting, letting them have office space in his building, whatnot. But to me, I don't think they're going to bring Charles Widmore into the experience as much as they might bring an actor into play Alvar Hanso.
Yeah, very possible. I mean, that would definitely play into your hopes and theory as far as seeing Hanzo before the summer's over.
It could just be a reference to, wasn't there an Adam Sandler movie about Mr. Deeds or something like that? I don't know if that's
Well, shout out to Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Question number 10. I think that's really important for us to figure out, though. I think we know Larry Cooper's Gary Troop, pretty sure Thomas Jackson's Thomas Middlework, but who is this guy Frederick Deeds? It's a character I think we've yet to see. Number 10, what will happen during, this is question 10, what will happen during Act 3 of the experience? You know, we heard from the Entertainment Weekly article from one of the VPs at ABC saying that it's a three-act deal this game is going to be. We believe we're in the middle of Act 2 now because of the change that's taking place. What does Act 3 hold? I had a fun chat in the comments today about this. Daniel, you want to remind everybody about our 48-day theory in the act?
Yeah, basically, looking at the act so far, Act 1 was 48 days. It was May 3rd through June 19th. Act 2, if it follows the same format, would start June 20th and run through August 6th, and then Act 3 would run August 7th through September 23rd.
I sure hope that that this is the way the game is played, because I've promised my wife that by October that this thing would be over and that I would have to stop obsessing over all these comments and all these people whose names she thinks are weird. But here's my theory that I've been talking about in the comments. You can read the comments to our latest clue number 70, if you want to find out about it towards the bottom. I propose that Act 3, Rachel is going to go offline. We've had the hacks, we've had the blog, now it's going to go into the real world. I want her to take a GPS tracking unit with her or put one on Thomas Middlework, and I want her to be following him around the world where he's going, or follow her in search of Alvar Hanzo. And I want her to leave clues in, like, you know, underneath a park bench or somewhere that has some sort of a tracking unit where it's almost like geocaching we've talked about earlier, where you have to go find these things, and then it's a clue that somebody has to go back, you know, scan and post online on a blog like ours for everyone else to see and then talk about. Wouldn't that be cool?
I think that'd be awesome, and I would love to see them do that. However, I don't think it's going to happen. A couple reasons. One, it'd be terribly difficult to plan. You know, trying to coordinate this all over the world, I assume. And then hoping that someone not affiliated with the game doesn't screw up the clue before someone who is affiliated finds it. And two, I still stick with my original theory. I think that Rachel is going to get kidnapped in Act 3. I think she's taken so many risks, and I would imagine she's fairly easy to spot. If I'm an international corporation that can silence people and can find whoever they want, I don't see how she'd be that hard to find, especially when she's posting where she's going to be.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think Rachel's going to make it to the end, but I don't think – I hope it goes offline. I'm like looking for clues on the internet and all that, but let's get something a little more adventurous, and let's get something where we really have to rely on each other a little bit more. We already do. We rely on each other to solve these clues and different gifts and abilities, but like I do, I want somebody in Sydney, Australia, to find something that I have no chance of finding and be the only person, you know, to find it and post it. That would be so cool. Okay, well, that's a big question. Number 10, what will happen during Act 3 of the experience? I'd love to hear what other people hope will happen or think might happen. Question number 11 is, Daniel, this is one of your questions.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how Rachel's getting all of her money. She can afford plane tickets everywhere. She's staying in hotels. She had to bribe a nurse to get this last information. She's got some kind of cash flow from somewhere, and she obviously doesn't have to work at a real job to keep it. So, is she independently wealthy? I don't know where it's coming from.
Where are we getting all the money to run this blog and do this podcast?
That's a very, very good question.
We're not. Here's my answer to that question, Daniel. I think two things. Number one, her single mom, who's mysterious in regards to her father. If her father is Alvar Hanzo or someone else, I'm guessing that there's money being funneled in from her mom or through her family if her mom is dead now, like has been implied, but that maybe she has kind of family money. Or she used to work for the Hanzo Foundation, and I'm guessing they might pay pretty well. And so maybe she just saved up, and then she's given all she's got to this deal because it's so important to her personally. that she's like, I'm putting it all on the line. If I spend every last penny I have, I spend it all. Because she did say in one post, didn't she say she's short of funds or she's having to pay with cash or something like that?
Yeah, she did, and then all of a sudden it wasn't a problem anymore.
I know.
So I don't know. I don't know if we're going to answer that or not. It's just something that doesn't really make sense to me at this point in the story.
Last question, number 12, is who is Gidget Girl? And, you know, initially people thought that she might be Hugh's mistress, who I think is someone by the name of Darla, after listening to the phone conversation, a woman with a Scottish accent, not English, Scottish, leaving a message for Hugh, talking about it might not be a good idea first to me, you know.
Wow.
Says it. Yeah. If she isn't Darla, or Hugh's mistress, why did Gidget Girl want the pictures of McIntyre taken down? So who is she, and why did she want those pictures?
Yeah, she was really adamant about that. She wouldn't give Rachel any help until she took him down. And that doesn't make any sense to me. If she's really helping Rachel and if she's really interested in bringing the Hanzo Foundation down, what does she care about the pictures?
Who knows? Okay, those are our 12 questions. I want you guys to chat about those, discuss those. Now we've got something very special. It's another interview Daniel has planned for us. We're going to get on our Skype. This is legitimate. We're actually going to get on Skype. Hold on just a second. We'll get that set all up for you. Just 1 second. Check. I hope this works.
It doesn't.
Hello?
Hello?
Brace yourself. This is big. We have the Lost Ninja all the way from Australia. We'll go ahead and start off here. First off, I'll just call you Ninja. Ninja, I want to give you the opportunity to gloat and revel on air about being right about how Rachel is actually Persephone. Is there anything specific that you'd like to say to Speaker since he made derogatory statements about your mother last week?
Listen, look. It's not the ninja's style to gloat. I served up Speaker some humble pie on my blog. I don't know if you got to see it yet, because his mama got to it pretty quick. She's fast on the food. But what can I say? I was right, Speaker was wrong. The right people believe me. If you believed me and you knew that Rachel Blake was in fact Persephone, well done. You're a truth ninja.
Okay.
Hang on, Daniel. Speaking of Ninja's mother... I wanted to know, was she a ninja too? Ninja? Was your mom a ninja?
Actually, my mother was a ninjess, but it was just weekend work so she could pay for university, you know?
Okay, I have to ask because I'm a fan. Do you have any relation to the ninja from the Ask a Ninja podcast and AskAninja.com?
Oh, I love that podcast. Is that you?
There's actually no relation between myself and the Ask a Ninja, but we did sit down and enjoy a beer at the last ninja convention, and turns out the guy's just as devoted to the truth as I am. It was great.
Okay, Daniel, let me ask a question here. I've got to know this. How did your ninja skills help you obtain copies of Bad Twin for all the Hanzo haters down under? I heard it was pretty difficult to get Bad Twin in Australia.
Well, we've been having a lot of trouble getting Bad Twin out to the people here and the people learning the truth about what Hanzo were really up to, because Hanzo stepped in very early and managed to get Bad Twin blocked out here in Australia. So you haven't been able to buy it in stores. You've had to really hunt it down to get it for yourself. So I did what sneaky ninjas do best, and I got in contact with Speaker, and I got him to send me a secret shipment on the sly with a couple of copies of Bad Twin that I managed to get out to the ninjas. Of course, we couldn't just announce that I was getting them out. Ninjas had to find me, to find my friend, to ask the code word to get them. And when they did, they scored a free copy of The Truth. Now The Truth's out there amongst the people, and people are talking about Bad Twin. They need to know the truth. They need to know more about Widmore, about Hanzo, and about what they're really up to.
Okay, I've got one here. What is the most important thing you think everyone should remember about Gary Troop?
You need to remember that Gary Troop was just like us. He was desperate for the truth. Now, the press releases that Hanzo put out show that he was getting close to the truth of what they were really up to, if not discovering the entire Valenzetti equation and what was leading to what their work was involved with and so on. I think from Troop we have to take away the fact that the truth is more important than anything, but the truth can be deadly when you find it. So be careful. We need to be careful, and that's why I myself am being so secretive. That's why Speak Here is being so secretive, because we don't want to get caught.
Okay, enough about Bad Twin and Gary Troop. I want to know, you're face-to-face with Thomas Middlework in his super long ponytail, and you know, you happen to leave your house without your saber, without your throwing star, without your nunchucks, without your bow staff. What do you do?
If I ran into Middlework, well, I keep a plate of metal hidden in my mask, just in case. So I think I'd just run up and go straight for the headbutt, smash him in the nose. Oh, yeah, and then I'd definitely scalp him, because a pelt like that would bring so much honor.
Okay, I think we got time for one more here. Although we know Speaker is married, he seems to have a crush on Rachel Blake. Do you share this infatuation?
Speaker's married to a bearded woman, so I don't blame him for looking at the hottie Rachel. But I do mind him eyeing off my girl like that. Yeah, all right, I do like Rachel. I called it very early on in the picture that she was Persephone, and I proved myself a true believer in doing so. And I think in that action, I maybe just earned myself a little bit of kudos with the lovely lady. And I reckon she'd pick me over Speaker any day. I mean, at least I've got a nose.
Oh, man, sounds like he got cut off. Man, that's a bummer. We had so much trouble getting him on from Australia. So, Ninja, if you're listening, thank you so much. I've always wondered if Speaker didn't have a nose. Thanks for clearing that up. I'm also really interested to hear that Speaker's wife has a beard.
Yeah, and that's the best Australian accent we've had in the show to date. So
not as good as mine, mate.
Right, you're right.
That wasn't even close. Well, thank you for that interview, Ninja. Once again, let's move on. Daniel, I feel like we need to have some sort of a fanfare or something to help us pass on to, yes, it's time for listener feedback. This is officially the longest podcast ever. Daniel, this is an email from Daniel. Is it from you? Did you email ourselves?
No, it's actually a different guy with the same first name.
All right, here's what Daniel says. He says, "You guys rock. Problem is, now I've got the theme from Growing Pains running in my head 24/7. And then, listen to what he says. He says, "Did you notice that Alan Thick is an anagram for a hack Intel?"
Everything happens for a reason.
That's totally true. And I hope this helps you with the theme. Steve Dorff, I believe, is the guy that's performing this. And he's got some pretty sweet hair if you want to look Steve Dorff up on iTunes. All right, let's move on. More listener feedback. This is an email from Karen. Karen says this, all caps too, so it's important. "No more fat jokes. It is cruel and extremely insensitive. They're just as bad as racial jokes and totally uncalled for." Daniel, you know what she's talking about?
I think she's referring to something that Speaker said, not something that we said on the interview last week. So, Karen, we're sorry if Speaker's comments offended you. You can go visit his website, InsideTheExperience.com, and you can post on his blog about how wrong you think his comments were on our podcast.
Everybody should send him emails, speaker815@gmail.com, and tell him how inappropriate that is, because I agree. When we did the interview last week, I felt like it was cruel and extremely insensitive. Speaker, come on, they're just as bad as racial or other jokes. That's terrible. Okay, email from Scott. "Hey guys, this is Evil Monkey from the message boards. Also, I wanted to say that I graduated from high school a few weeks ago and was just wondering that maybe, just maybe, I could get a reference on the show. Come on, I graduated." Well, sorry, Scott. We're not going to talk about that on this podcast.
No, we're not going to mention Scott at all.
All right, let's move on. This is an email from Sybil. Sybil says, "Up until now, I've been following along, not exactly getting the clues by myself, but I've been following along. However, I have a problem." Because her problem is with her hearing. She says, in the past, she's taken other people's word for things, like there was eerie music in the background and whatnot. But now, a lot of this stuff, the videos, podcasts, etc. And basically she says, hey, I want to get my request out there that people continue to type up transcripts of DJ Dan's podcast and of Rachel's posts. And, I don't know if Sybil, if you can hear well enough to listen to our podcast, but I just want to go ahead and ask everybody out there, hey, if you're a regular, take turns transcribing in the comments the DJ Dan transcripts and also Rachel's, because there are more than just Sybil. There's several people out there that are hard of hearing that aren't really able to follow along as well now that we have so much audio and video. So let's all do our part, take turns transcribing that stuff for Sybil and others like her. Here's another email from Gabriel. Hey, I'll just read it because Gabriel says he's from Brazil. I'll read it in my Brazilian accent, which is really good. He says, hey, that Brazilian accent was an insult, man. It was more like Mexican. Try to do better, okay? That's better, isn't it?
Yeah, that's way better.
Way better.
It was way better because I didn't have to do it that time.
You know, let me just, Daniel, this is a shout-out for you. This is an email from Jack Bauer's Happy Place, which I'm not sure where that is, but that's where it came from. He says, hey, guys, wanted to drop a line and say I loved your Thomas Middlework interview. It was hysterical. I was listening to the podcast on the subway this morning, and normally it takes a lot to crack my stone face during that time. But you guys did it. I almost lost it when Middlework listed world domination as one of his hobbies and then denied ever saying it. Doctor of love, baby. It makes me smile even now, 12 hours later. I mean, really, superb job on the writing. Keep it up. Daniel, that's a kudos to you.
Well, thanks. You know, really the credit goes to Middlework. He's really a funny guy once you get past his ponytail.
True, true. And lastly, I've got an email from Lil Blonde Dude. I'm a Lil Blonde Dude. And Lil Blonde Dude says, hey, guys, this is my fourth time. I've emailed you over and over. I just want to say, longer podcast, longer podcast, longer podcast, longer podcast, longer podcast. A whole hour. I agree with Sean. This is the funniest thing I've ever listened to in ages. Just make it longer. I was shoving my iPod earphones into my whole family's ears, and they were like, who the heck is Persephone? All I have to say is, Lil Blonde Dude, Sean, everyone, this is the longest podcast, I think, in the history of all podcasts.
Definitely, definitely. And I also predict we won't get as many requests for a long podcast next week.
No, they're gonna be angry with us. And also, I want to put a request out there. Please don't ask your family and friends to listen to this. It's embarrassing enough as it is.
They will think you're weird.
It's embarrassing to us, not necessarily to you guys. I mean, maybe it is to you. They'll think you're a loser. But on that note, I think we have to wrap up the longest podcast ever. This is episode 8 of the Lost Experience Clues podcast. I hope you enjoyed our 12 questions, our interview with Ninja, and I hope you guys got your feedback heard. Send us an email to thelostexperienceclues@gmail.com if you have any more. This is Peniel. I'll talk to you next time. Peace out, everybody.